Howdy, welcome to Auto Hunters Drive the Bid podcast, driven by ClassicCars.com. I am Diego Rosenberg, and this gentleman is Derek Shakey. Howdy.
Baba booey to you.
I thought you were not going to say that.
Well, you know, you inspired me last week.
Okay, very good, very good. Shall we start with the news?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, I noticed there's a theme here. You'd mentioned it earlier. So I was looking through automotive news, and this one really stuck out to me, and it happens to be Bugatti news, just like last week. So last week, I was talking about a bespoke creation that they made for a customer. These are two that they made for a couple in Tennessee. So the story goes that the husband and the couple got a Chiron Supersport first, and I guess he had a certain level of customization on it. And then his wife got one and took it to their tailor-made program. They call it, I'm going to butcher this, Sur Mesure, which is French for tailor-made. And she had them give it a signature color scheme that was inspired by a special version of the Bugatti Veyron from like 12 years ago. So she had the orange and red one made, and it was supposed to, the color scheme is supposed to bring to mind what is it? I want to get this right. It's supposed to mimic the way light is reflected, the orange and red one. And the colors they used on it are Rosso Efesto and Arancia Mira. And so, as you can imagine, it's a very laborious process doing that. You know, they've got to get the 2D line forms cut and laid out, and then all of the lines on the vehicle are painted by hand, layer by layer, and then clear coated, right? So the husband saw his wife's car and he thought, wow, that's gorgeous. He was, you know, impressed by it. So even though he already had his car made, he decided to take it to the same department at Bugatti. He shipped his car from Tennessee to France. And over the course of 7 months, they customized it in a coordinating way with her car. And in doing that, they basically had to rebuild it. They had to, you know, remove all of the so many of the major panels. And then they had to remove every part of the interior, because while they were doing the exterior work, they didn't want any dust to get on the inside of the car.
God forbid.
Exactly. Yeah. So basically they rebuilt it. They changed the roof. What do they call it? They have the, I think it's the Sky View. Yeah. Sky View roof. And, it took 7 months from start to finish, and it took one person 4 weeks just to come up with the sort of guidelines or the templates for the lines that they laid over the body. And then, of course, from there, they removed those, and then they actually laid down the lines by hand.
I think that an oil change for these two cars is worth more than my house.
You know, it sounds about right. I mean, yeah, everything on these is just mind-bogglingly expensive. I can't imagine. I mean, I would think, I wonder how much the conversion process was in terms of a percentage of the retail price of a regular Chiron Supersport, if there is such a thing.
You could have bought a V12 Ferrari with that.
Oh, yeah, probably a few.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you know, he had the door panels done and installed by hand to coordinate with the outside of the car. And his car, the husband's car, has a dual meaning. So if you translate the French, it equates to one of two phrases. It's either bolt of lightning, which is why you have that, I think they call it French racing blue over the black. And that's a 10% black tint to the carbon fiber. Or it means love at first sight.
Okay.
Yeah, what can you say after that, right?
I do like the red one better.
Yeah, you know, I can't put my, I kind of think I like the black and blue one more, but, and I usually don't like black and blue together, but anyway, I mean, it's, I mean, they were already hyper exotic, very special cars, but this is just, it shows you the level of personalization that Bugatti is capable of. And, you know, the painstaking attention to detail, because in building the other one, they were saying in the press release that they had to make sure everything was down to the, you know, correct to the millimeter. And they wanted to make sure that the lines of the carbon fiber bodywork lined up across the car.
Okay.
But hey, you know, yeah, when you got deep pockets, you can have somebody do anything, I guess.
Yeah, sure. I guess they can afford private school for their kids, right?
No, they actually had to make some cuts for that. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's, but you know, what's crazy about it, or what I like about it is, yes, I mean, that is, you know, people in a such a stratosphere, but I like the fact that, you know, they enjoy them together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the things about this hobby is, what makes it great is that when you can enjoy it with somebody else. I don't think you're enjoying this story, though.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure out things to say.
Yeah, I get that.
So, shall we?
Let's okay. Move on.
Okay, I wrote down some notes, and they're not appearing here, which is a big shame. So I'm going to have to dig up from my memory. So forgive me, folks. Hyundai had this show car from a year ago, maybe. And they have decided they are going to produce this. They're going to build 100 of them.
I figured it'd be a small batch, yeah.
It's going to be 70 for the street and 30 for race enthusiasts.
Oh, okay.
And here's the interesting thing. It's going to have a hybrid hydrogen electric propulsion system.
That sounds like a Toyota thing.
Have they had a hydrogen electric?
I don't know if they've done a hydrogen electric, but I know they've had like hydrogen cars. I guess for the California market.
For what is it called? The Mirai?
It's that ugly. Yeah.
I've seen that as a former resident of the Golden State. You know, when they said hybrid, I thought, well, why does it say EV? And it's like, okay, it's hybrid hydrogen electric. That's kind of interesting. It's going to be driving the rear wheels. It's going to have 800 horsepower.
Great.
So
those production numbers, is that U.S. market only, or is that worldwide?
No, it's worldwide.
Okay.
I actually didn't say I assumed. I inferred it was worldwide. So it remains to be seen. It's a nice looking car. It's supposed to harken back to the 1974 Hyundai Pony Coupe, which I saw a picture, and it looks like it's an Italian styled Japanese car. You know, there's a few of them in the late 60s, early 70s. It looks good. So you know that inspired this. In some ways, this has a little bit of a muscle car look to it. Not quite American, but it almost looks like it's a Japanese version of a muscle car to a point. But then again, I see like Ioniq 5 stuff, like the headlights, you know, the 8-bit looking stuff, the taillights. I actually like how, like, you know, the implication is they are round or oval taillights, but they're kind of cut off. I kind of like that. Like they're peeking from underneath the trunk lid. I do think that's a nice touch. But otherwise, yeah, it's got that 8-bit look like the Ioniq 5.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is it's interesting. It's interesting to see Hyundai be involved in something like this for the enthusiast. Although, what kind of enthusiast is interested in EVs, if not hydrogen EVs, that remains to be seen. That's something for the future.
I'm guessing the main draw to these is the styling, you know, and maybe people are just like, it looks so cool. I want it. I don't care what's powering it.
For sure. And it's like, I can't afford the Bugatti, but maybe I can afford this.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what these are priced at. And, you know, what's cool about this is Hyundai is not, you know, a high-end boutique bespoke vehicle manufacturer. But the fact that they created something not only so cool, but that they responded to the market's interest.
Yeah. And that kind of will go to a topic we will broach in a few minutes. Yeah, I'm in 100% agreement with that. So we have a holiday coming up. It is not Christmas. It is Festivus. That is on Saturday, the 23rd, if I'm correct.
And that's for the rest of us.
Exactly. So the thing with Festivus is that, what is it called again? The
airing of grievances.
Airing of grievances. Thank you.
No feats of strength
now. So today on Drive the Bid, we will be airing some grievances. We will be venting our spleens. So the first one is you.
All right. I just got to say this. If for the people that fall into these groups, I got a lot of problems with you people. So the first group that drives me nuts are people that treat parking lots like they're highways. They're just zooming through them. You're trying to, you know, that's the thing. As dangerous as the highway can be, I think I'm more nervous in parking lots because, yeah, people, a lot of times they'll cut through the spots at like full speed.
I can't stand that.
Yeah, it just drives me
nuts. Technically, it's illegal too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can see why, you know, and my thing is, you know, don't cream me in the parking lot just because you're trying to get the last freaking, you know, rigatoni lean cuisine. You know, it can wait.
So what does this car have to do with it?
This just tied in with the idea of people treating a parking lot like a highway or a public road.
I didn't know it was a Volvo thing or something.
No, just to sell the idea of it.
So yes, I do appreciate your issue with this. I am on board with it. So good call. By the way, this is a tangent. Have you ever seen the shopping cart narc?
No.
Of parking lots. There's a guy on YouTube that I think is based in California, and he takes people to task for not putting the shopping carts in the jockey.
Oh man, yeah, he's probably got his hands full with that.
Yeah, and he even had a guy pull a gun on him. But it's kind of funny because he's, you know, it's like, you know, of course the people that are compliant and be like, yeah, no, you're right, and you know they put it back. You know, they don't show that.
Yeah,
at least I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
but you know the aggressive people who dig in their heels and are just somewhat disrespectful. You know, there's plenty of people like that.
Yeah, and I guess that's why he doesn't show the other types because, you know, the belligerent ones are more interesting.
Well, I haven't seen it in months. I've seen it a few times. It would be nice to see, you know, I don't know if he's shown that, but it would be nice to see someone who's being compliant and apologetic because it, you know, it adds some humanity to it.
True.
You know, it's like, hey, you know, here's a good denizen. So here is my, I want to say rant, but what's the word again?
Oh, airing of grievances.
Airing of grievances. Thank you. So Mustang versus Camaro. And it's not really just Mustang versus Camaro. It's Team A and Team B, whether it's sports, your hometown team. You know, it's like, who's to say that my hometown team is better than your hometown team? Is it just because I'm from that town, so therefore I've picked that as my favorite, and it's better than yours that you picked as your favorite? I think it's totally ridiculous. I think all those kind of discussions, it happens a lot with cars, of course. Sometimes I call these people automotive supremacists because they know nothing about other brands. They only know how to tout their own, and it is beyond comprehension for them that maybe another brand has done something better than their favorite brand. So, you know, the Mustang versus Camaro thing is somewhat symbolic in this case, just because it's the most familiar. But it could be of anything, and I find it all annoying.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, well, and here's the thing. Like, if you constantly believe and push that your favorite car or brand is infallible, especially relative to its competitor, it's never going to improve with that logic in place.
Mm-hmm. True. True. But yeah, I just find it annoying. I mean, going back to the sports thing, you have had people beat the hell up at stadiums because they're leaving. I mean, usually it seems it's always they're leaving or they're at the parking lot after the game, and someone's found unconscious based on some kind of argument they had.
Well, and then there's alcohol involved, I'm sure. Yeah, there's a lot of beer served at those events.
It serves no good purpose.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, you know what? I'm glad you like what you like.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I do. I'm glad people like what they like too. But to be ignorant or exclusive of other brands, or to even admit one tiny fault. I mean, I've seen it in sports. Like you watch. You know, if you're around people that are fan of a team, and whatever the opposing team does, everything is wrong, or they're cheating, or the refs are on their side. But if their team gets called for something, oh, it's completely one-sided. It's just not realistic. And it is kind of tiring after a while. It's like, really? Like you can't even admit that your team or your car in this case, like, well, maybe they could improve this. There's exactly. Nothing wrong with
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
I guess people see it as maybe a reflection of themselves. You know, like if they admit to anything, it's almost personal because they identify with the car.
I don't know. I mean, that's probably a job for the sociologists out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's absurd. So let's go to another grievance of yours.
Oh, yeah. So one good thing among others about working in the office we're in now is I don't have to take the 202, because when I was going to the old office, I would come across a lot of debris left on the road by people who didn't strap or secure the things in the beds of their trucks. So just in... what, maybe a year and change of going to the old office in Ahwatukee, I saw on the highway a ladder, a cinder block, and a big, like industrial size round plastic garbage can. Usually like in the middle lane of the 202.
No barbecues?
No, but I'm sure somebody has. And you hear about it like, I might have seen, not on the 202, but maybe somewhere else, I might have seen like a mattress.
Oh, I've seen mattresses before.
It's just, I mean, you're losing your stuff, but you're also putting other people's lives in danger.
I have a feeling the mattress was not going anywhere other than the rubbish bin.
True, but at least get it there. Yeah, it just drives me nuts. It's like, okay, look, if you've got leaves... maybe a Coke can that flies out of the bed of your truck. Okay, that's kind of a pain, but not the biggest deal in the world. But when you got stuff that has weight to it, you know, that you should be aware of, you know, flying out.
I saw it with a shovel.
Oh, good grief.
My wife was in the car. I was following her because her friend was dropping off a car at the airport, at the rental place, and I was a few minutes behind them, and there was a shovel on the ground, and it seems that it flew in front of them and hit the car, rental car.
Oh, good grief.
And it's like, imagine if that was a motorcyclist.
Oh yeah, game over. Yeah. Well, and as it is, I mean luckily everybody was fine, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I probably did a number on that rental car.
I think that he got off easy, but they took his deposit.
Oh yeah, okay.
Mm-mm-mm. But I mean, it could have hit the windshield.
Yeah, I mean, it could have gone in the long way.
It hit the A-pillar.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's getting close. Yeah, and it's completely preventable.
Yeah. So, thank you for your grievance. I would find it hard to believe that anyone would disagree with you.
You'd be surprised.
So, here is my grievance. You don't need to... I put this up for just this... sake of example. There's nothing really to read here. This is a press release. And if you guys want to get on the internet and read some automakers' press releases, they are absurd. I have here a press release of an unnamed brand, and I highlighted some of the more absurd things mentioned here. It's just like, number one, the creativity that you need to come up with this stuff is either so great because you have to think of this stuff, or it's so stupid because you have to think of this stuff. So this car is the ultimate expression of modern craftsmanship and breathtaking luxury with stunning dynamic ability as standard. It's like mumbo jumbo. Airline seats create a haven of wellness.
I was going with it until they said wellness. That just seems like such a modern like buzz term to throw out.
Sustainable carpets. Now, like, I'm all for sustainability, whatever that is. I mean, I know what it is, but I'm all for it. But it's just like, I mean, how much money do the people of PETA have? I have no idea. But sustainable carpets doesn't sound as interesting to me as maybe 10-speed automatic. I don't know. This specification provides a contemporary alternative aesthetic. This new model defines a new pinnacle for this car's family. Pinnacle is to me like iconic. It's just like these words you see being used that really mean nothing because everyone's using them and everything's iconic and everything's the pinnacle. It has no meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Its bespoke enhancements make every journey an occasion to be savored. Unique design features inside and out make a striking statement, each one curated with painstaking care.
Uh-oh, they used painstaking. I can't use that word anymore.
The seat to cosset occupants in unrivaled comfort. The seats and doors demonstrate the craftsmanship that elevates the interior to a truly pinnacle position.
There you go. Maybe you should play a drinking game. You know, every time you see pinnacle in a press release, you take a shot.
This leather is this brand's sustainable leather strategy. The mark already uses leather hides that are a byproduct of the meat industry and highly traceable.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
Like I guess they can determine which plant
came
which...
from cow number 54.
Yeah, something
where
like that.
Are
yeah,
you?
Yeah. cow number 54.
It's absurd. And do I have anything else here? No, that's it. But you get the idea.
Yeah,
it's press releases are ridiculous, and I wish that they just had a normal person writing them. Or at least it seems that there's this culture involved that, you know, this is how press releases are supposed to be. And this is a prestigious brand I just read. It's not just the prestigious brands.
Well, I think that's part of it right there is a certain image that they have to convey, whether it's through pictures or product or language in this case.
But nothing says that the image of a brand has to be ridiculous. That's the thing. It's like... you can write it with more prose. Like, do you remember that ad I showed you for the Jordan Playboy, the ad somewhere west of Laramie? You know, that ad is all prose. It's all beautiful. It's something that's it's almost like a car that's not so remarkable, but became remarkable because of the ad, because of the prose involved describing it. That's all that's needed. You know, it's marketing. This is not marketing. This is boilerplate BS.
Yeah, you know, I didn't have as strong an adverse reaction to it as you did, but I know where you're coming from because there is another prestigious brand where I would go through their press releases, you know, when I was freelancing, and it would take forever to get through them because there was so much fluff and flowery language, which I appreciate, but it just added so much unnecessary length. I'm just like, let's get to the point here.
I think War and Peace is easier to read than this. did you see what brand this is, by the way?
I did, okay. Yes.
So another grievance of yours?
Yes. So it drives me nuts when I'm at a stoplight and it turns green. And the second it turns green, the person behind me honks as if I've just been sitting there on my phone. You know, it's like, it just turned green. I saw it just like you, you know, like is the nanosecond that you want to arrive at the next stoplight ahead of me going to make your day better? You know, it's a race to the bottom.
What if the answer is yes?
Then, you know, they need a lot more help than I can give them. And me speeding up or hammering the throttle right as the light turns green is not going to help them.
Gotcha. So what's this interior picture for?
The horn.
Ah, okay. Is this the new Hornet?
Yes.
Okay. It's not that I recognize the interior, but I figured it's a Dodge. Maybe this is the latest and greatest.
Well, it's a corporate cousin to a new Alpha, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it definitely has an Alpha look to the shapes.
So here is my grievance. This goes back to the Hyundai discussion. I find it hard to keep track of Hyundais and Kias. You know, they're owned by the same company. Sometimes I have trouble corresponding one model that's analogous to the other brands. But what I find admirable about both companies is that they're doing things a little bit different. They're catching people's attention, and they seem to be fleet. They're swift on their feet and doing new things. What was that model they just introduced? I don't even remember if it was a Hyundai or Kia. You see, that's one of the problems. But it looks completely different than the previous generation.
Oh, the Santa Fe.
Yeah. And it's like, it keeps things interesting. So my rant, my grievance, if you will, is that I wish the American companies were behaving in that manner. Because I think anything that the American companies can do to keep them in the forefront of the automotive public's consciousness is a good thing. You know, I the stuff I like tend to be from a time when Detroit kind of ruled the world, and it's not that case anymore. And it's not, you know, this kind of goes back to the other thing about, like, I don't need Detroit to be number one. You know, it doesn't, you know, my sports team, et cetera. It's not, you know, it doesn't have to be like that, but I like to see Detroit always excel. And what's missing with the companies out of Detroit that's not missing with Hyundai and Kia?
Well, the good news is, you know, the automotive industry in so many ways. I mean, I saw it when I was freelancing. You would see people that were journalists. They would go over to the product side, and sometimes they would, you know, go back to the journalist side. There's a lot of turnover. You know, people, you know, executives change companies, designers change companies. So maybe, you know, some of that flavor that Hyundai and Kia have right now, that might translate to American companies, well, in the near future.
I want to say it has to do with maybe the processes of creating a car and production and everything involved with that. I think that I imagine that, you know, having lived in Detroit and having been indirectly involved in the auto industry at the time, I think Detroit has trouble moving in a fast manner. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's just Detroit necessarily, but Detroit definitely is a dinosaur compared with the Korean home market, South Korean, let's say, before we get some hate mail. So I don't know, you know, is there something from an organizational perspective that allows these Korean manufacturers to behave in that manner?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think you've got a great point, because it's not just a singular person or a group of people. I mean, there is a bureaucracy in place.
And unions too.
That too. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know, but you know, it would be nice, because, cars from Detroit, if they're kept fresh, they will always be in the consciousness of the car buyers. in ways that may overcome the certain people who will say, like, American cars are no good or they're not reliable, because we know that's not quite true.
Yeah.
So that is my grievance. I think that's the last of the grievances. So this week we're not going to do any quick takes. So because of the upcoming holiday, and we'll be taking a break from Drive the Bid for a few weeks because of the holiday. So we are going to start off with Auto Hunter picks. These cars currently are on an Auto Hunter that you can buy. And the first one is yours, Derek.
All right. So this is not a Shelby Cobra, but this is a replica of one. This is a 2021 Factory 5 Racing Mark IV Cobra Roadster. And this one, if y'all are interested in it, this one, the auction ends Tuesday, December 26th. So you have plenty of time. As far as the nitty gritty on this, this is reportedly the result of a $70,000 plus build. And in fact, it was hand built by Ron Everett, who is a Cobra specialist, FFR Cobra specialist. And this one is also production number 10,000. Since it was built, it's only racked up 8,400 miles. Under the hood there, you got a 427. That's a Blueprint Engines built 427. It's equipped with Holley fuel injection. And then it sends power to the rear wheels through a Tremec TKO 600 5-speed manual.
So here's a question. I don't know if this is a dumb question. Is that a 427 small block or a big block?
I assume a big block.
Because it seems a lot of the modern Cobras have small blocks, and I think there's a 427 small block, but I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
I could be totally wrong. And from this perspective, I can't tell whether this is an FE series 427, which would be the kind of engine in an original Cobra. So I don't know. I just thought I'd ask. I'm sure on any prospective buyer who sees this on Auto Hunter will be able to figure it out.
We do have a lot of savvy buyers out there.
Yeah, unfortunately, I just am not very familiar with Cobra replicas. So that's what led me to think the question. So very cool car. I'm kind of keen to blue and white when it comes to Cobras. You know, the traditional configuration, and also American Racing colors as well.
Yeah, it's a good combo on this. Their, you know, proprietary names, I guess, are or at least what was supplied by the seller, Casablanca Pearl White, and then you've got the blue stripes, but then you got the little red detailing at the edges too. It's a great combo.
Yeah.
And then of course side pipes are always fantastic.
So thank you. So my Auto Hunter pick is going to be this 1964 Mercury Monterey Breezeway four-door sedan. Now, again, my notes are missing from this presentation, but I believe that this car expires on the 27th, which I think is a Wednesday, December 27th. So there's plenty of time for you guys to bid. And what is a breezeway, you may ask? Maybe not you personally, but some people in TV land. The breezeway is the roof line that Mercury had. It's got this, what I'll call a very dated roof line. And you can see that this rear window goes down. Now, in 1964, starting mid-year 63, there were two types of roof lines. They had the breezeway, and then they had the Marauder. The Marauder had the semi-fastback roof line without the retractable rear window. Now, personally, I prefer the Marauders, but I know a lot of people like these. They got a really nice gee whiz factor. This car has a 392 barrel. It was originally painted peacock, which I think is this turquoise, but the whole thing was turquoise. It wasn't two-tone. And to tell you the truth, I don't think the two-toning from the top to the trunk lid is correct, but it's nice. It's logical. Like, Mercury should have done that.
Yeah, it looks good.
And I could be wrong, but this car was a monotone car. So it's got an automatic. You can see it has the underdash air conditioning, which, you know, was... I don't know if this is aftermarket or it's, you know, dealer installed, which was a thing back then, even though it seems weird to us. So this is kind of a cool car. You know, it's something that probably doesn't cost an arm and a leg, but it's a nice, easy way to get into an old car.
Yeah, and that two-tone draws even more attention to the breezeway window.
Absolutely.
It's very strategic, worked out nicely.
So the Monterey is just the bottom of the line Mercury. Then they had the Montclair. I'm guessing that was named after an upscale suburb in New Jersey. Could be wrong. That's the only Montclair I know.
Well, they had one named after a donut. It was called the Eclair.
Eclair. Boo hiss. And then the top of the line was the Park Lane. So I believe all three series had both breezeways and marauders available. So I could be wrong, but you know, you get the idea. If it's not 100% true, maybe just the Park Lanes and the Monterey's. I have no idea. Now, where's Park Lane? I don't know.
It's wherever you want it to be, Diego.
Fair enough. Your turn.
All right. So this is a very interesting one because I like C5 Vets, so a lot of people do. This one has an interesting little twist, though. So the basics on this first. So it's a 98 C5 Vet. It's, of course, got the LS1. It's got the 6-speed manual. Pretty low miles, 67,000 miles and change. As you can see there, they swapped out the regular shift knob for the shift knob from a C6 Vet. Also installed a short shifter. But what's especially noteworthy about this is this has the Z51 package. And I've seen a lot of C7 and especially C8 Vets now with the Z51 package. And these days, you know, the Z51 package has so many enhancements, you know, the rear end, the tires, the spoiler in the back. In fact, I didn't know there was a Z51 package available for the C5, you know, because I'd just seen so many C5s or, you know, if there was a performance model, it would be the Z06, you know, those are very familiar. I didn't know this existed. So back then, the Z51 package was pretty much just suspension only. So it had a larger sway bars front and rear. They upgraded the leaf springs and the shocks and also installed a power steering cooler. So this car has that enhancement. And then, yeah, a red stick Corvette convertible. Great package from the start. Well, you know, those leaves were just like me when I found out this had the Z51 package. Blown away.
Okay, so my second Auto Hunter pick is this 1969 Plymouth Roadrunner convertible. The Roadrunner came out in 68. The convertible was introduced for 69. It kind of goes against the Roadrunner's credo because it was supposed to be a bare bones performance car. And here you have kind of a luxurious convertible. Mm. Not to say that it's luxurious in its specifications, but for a bare bones performance car, that convertible doesn't quite fit. So I would say the bean counters won in this case, and they made just over 2,000 of them. This one has a 4-speed, which is much rarer than the automatic. I want to say about 700 had the 4-speed, which was the standard transmission. This is painted in the dark green that on the fender tag is coded F8, which is the same dark green available in Challengers and Chargers now.
Yeah.
Oh, I know they are discontinuing it now. This one, besides the 4-speed, is also cool because the fender tag has it coded for the Coyote Duster air induction system. So that's pretty cool. This car, you can see, has a bench seat. The convertibles had a more upscale bench seat standard versus, let's say, the coupe had a more downmarket bench seat. This one was an option for the coupe, and you could get also buckets for either. And the hardtop, of course. This car originally came with a white interior. So let's say white seats with black components, but right now everything is black on this vehicle. And you can see the nice big fat Hurst shifter poking out from the floor. No console, because you only could get a console with bucket seats. So this is a pretty cool car. For those of you who are looking at internet land, there is, yes, you are seeing a tack here, but this car was built with a tack in the dashboard, so they just wanted something more reliable. I only point that out because I think gauge packages in old cars are an important option. Like, it's a nice thing to have. I just think that maybe they're not always the most reliable. Hence this aftermarket.
Yeah, I guess it's more to, you know, crack in there to fix those than it is to add an aftermarket one.
Sure. So this is a cool car on Auto Hunter. I believe also this one expires on the 27th of December.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I pinged the rep a little bit of interesting ownership history on this. The original owner's name was Robert Abui, but he went by Bob.
Is that how we're going to end the podcast this week?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. So thank you for watching and listening to Drive the Bid podcast, sponsored by Auto Hunter, driven by ClassicCars.com. Don't forget to press like on YouTube so you can subscribe to this podcast. Merry Christmas, Happy Festivus, and anything else you celebrate, we are with you, and we'll see you in the new year. Thank you.
Happy holidays, everyone.